Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Killian Faulkner, the Chief Information Security Officer at Interim.
So I suppose my background originally was in technology more generally. I was in the Linux and networking space. So I suppose like a lot of security people today, I kind of started off somewhere else. So the Linux and networking space was quite good from a security perspective, as that we had a tendency to tinker a bit more in those kind of areas. And then moving into security became a natural thing because it was in demand at the time. I remember around that time when I swapped over to security, it was game development and security were the two headline items that people in around me were thinking about at the time. I think the reason why it's continued to gain traction is just as we do more and more things with technology and more new things are pushed out there. And to a certain degree, the bar required for the bad guys, as it were, has been dropping. So if you compare it to when I began in security, where you'd write your own exploits and your own scripts for breaking into things, you can download a nice little pack off the internet which does it for you, or you can buy tools as a service where you can deploy huge botnets to take control of thousands of computers. Whereas when I started out, that was a bit of a fiction. So I suppose the ease of use of technology from both sides of the equation has made it a bit more of a concern.
Was it obvious to go into security then when you kind of ended up gravitating towards it? Were there a lot of people you knew that were kind of going towards it? Or were you kind of the outlier in a way for going into security when you did?
At the time, it was kind of, I wasn't particularly an outlier, but I morphed into it because I thought it'd be fun, to be fair, which probably puts that conversation of game developer versus security into a bit of a different light. It was game developer or hacker was what I was looking at in my own head. I found it just a bit more entertaining, a bit more fun to work ways around what other people have put in place, to really get an understanding of something, kind of strip it down, figure out how all the components fit together and how to make them do something that they weren't meant to. So it was quite a good, it worked for my particular way of thinking that I like to see how things work, you know. At the time, there weren't a huge amount of people pushing into it. It was mostly people who have been far more technically minded rather than the kind of broader split of governance you have now as well. It was very much a drive of the kind of technocrats among us as opposed to anything else. There was a handful of people in there, but I would say primarily mostly were moving into development or some into infrastructure, but primarily not security at the time.
Is it an interesting space, because of that, in that people are coming from a lot of different backgrounds, and does that make it, particularly interesting to work in that space because, there are so many people from, I assume technical background, but maybe not also, that are kind of now getting into security. I suppose working with people is what we do on a day-to-day basis. So, that adds a lot of value to the to our enjoyment through work. So have you found that, or are people coming from similar backgrounds? I'm not entirely sure.
I think they come from all backgrounds. I think one of the fun things about it is that there's everyone has a slightly different view on it. There is a new wave of people coming from security undergrads now. I know they didn't exist when I started out, but it definitely puts a different slant on things where people are specifically gearing towards security from day one. Whereas for me, it was I think it was a year or two after I'd been out in the workplace when I went back to do a master's in security to get that. But you know, when I started out, it was all just computer science or computer engineering. Whereas now, you do as a result of that have a broad spectrum of people who come from various backgrounds. You know, you have network guys, server guys, you have Linux guys, application guys, and they're all different developers. Pretty much anything which has its own subset in IT generally probably has its equivalent security based on skill sets, which is nice because it means that you always have something new to learn in it. And I suppose my own view typically when hiring is, you know, find someone who's better than I am at something and smarter than me in some way, and then, you know, hire them and listen to them, and then that brings value to the business because fundamentally there's too much for us to cover independently. So it's a really good spread. And that's true of the governance side too. There's a broad spread of governance people who came up from a governance side, a risk management side, who don't necessarily have all the technology. And they have a different viewpoint on things as well, which informs how we view the world and how we should approach security in the organizations we work in.
So what is the typical kind of security team comprised of them? You know, what's who are you communicating with, you know, consistently on a day-to-day basis?
I suppose it depends. Like any organization, right, how you configure it is fairly heavily informed by your own personal experiences. For me, I tend to develop into two subcategories. We have here in Intro, where I am now, we have a security assurance team, and that is the more governance, risk, and compliance side of things. And it's not just purely audit, it's not policy, it's assuring the security services across the board. So it's everything from certifications to, you know, best practices to security awareness, and generally putting better governance around how we structure our programs and our projects with security in mind. And then on the other side, I have the more, arguably the more technical aspects of security. So we have a kind of internal security and consultancy team, and that's where I would see my security architects, my kind of security engineers, those guys would get on that side. Both are part of the same core team to a certain degree, right? They're separate, but they're together. They sit beside each other wherever they can. They work together. They integrate, and they're kind of viewed as one team in terms of their deliverables. But they are two distinct skill sets, and having them cross over helps everyone because then they get a bit of learning from the other side of the fence. But there are very few people who will fully straddle both sides, such that you can have one team to sit it all. You kind of do need different people, different skill sets. And for me, I split that into two teams. But I have worked in places where it's one team, and you have a split of half and half as well, but it tends to be the way it goes.
So your responsibilities, I'm assuming, a little bit broader than the rest of the team. You know, was that difficult initially to transition into, to kind of cover all things and, you know, have that kind of more macro perspective on things in when it came to decision making as well?
To a certain degree, I had the technical background, so I had to go off and learn the more risk and governance side. For me, what that translated into was a better understanding of the business. So if I need to understand business risk, I need to understand what business is. We have a tendency to talk about the companies we work in as us and the business. And that's an IT thing, not just a security thing. It's come through from anyone who believes themselves not to be decision makers, which I don't think security should consider itself in that bucket, really. We can be decision makers if we decide we want to be, and we just need to put our best foot forward. So for me, it was understanding what that was. So I kept having these conversations with the business, and it always frustrated me. It's like, well, we are the business. Why is it any different? So for me, I went off and I did an MBA to pull in that knowledge, that business specific knowledge, and to kind of learn the jargon and lingo which those around me were using, which wasn't making the most amount of sense to me all the time. And I really kind of clarified things a small bit in that, you know, really everyone's out for the same goals. We all have different agendas, which kind of conflict with each other at time to time, but fundamentally we're all pulling in the same direction. And what that meant was then my day to day became a bit easier because I understood how to couch things in terms others understood, how they're going to drive towards that enterprise value approach to things. So now my day to day is spent. I spend most of it with the CEO team. I spend a lot of time speaking to our general legal counsel, our CTO, or even your products. Kind of around the enterprise risk management side of things as well. So that's quite a useful useful place to be in the security area that you're plugged directly into that, because we often forget that it's about risk, and we spend too much time in the black and white of things. You know, either it's good or it's bad, it's right or it's wrong. There's only one way to do security, and the truth is that it's all a risk management exercise. And if you forget that, you can waste time and effort and cycles just burning away at something which fundamentally isn't going to work or won't work for the organization, because you've forgotten that realistically we all live in the gray area in between to some degree. So I might have gone slightly off your point there. Apologies.
No, it's interesting. It's interesting, and it gives a good sense of the broader responsibilities. And I did notice that you recently did your MBA. I'm assuming that was to kind of enhance the skill set on the business side as well. And what was the thought process behind that? Really interesting move.
It very much was informed by my view that I was missing something. To a large degree, my last couple of career moves have been on the same. I came from a consultancy background, and I kept wondering why I would go into a company and I'd, you know, very clearly and easily lay out the security problems they had and what they needed to fix them, and I'd come back a year later and they'd be the same, and I'd be given the same advice which was never moved, and for me that meant I was missing something. So I moved in-house, and it discovers that, you know, it's easy to sit down and criticize, it's very difficult to implement. So I quite quickly learned that the difference between consulting on something and doing something, you're quite vast, and it's easy to pick out the issues. It's difficult to figure out a simple, effective path to solving them. And the same was true for the business, for the MBA. It was, do you know what, there's things I'm not understanding, there's things which I don't quite get, and realistically, I'm not going to pick up on it by a meeting here or there. I need to immerse myself in that world and see what it is that I'm missing. And the MBA brought that to the fore, kind of gave me an idea on corporate finance and marketing and financial risk as well, which we believe we understand in security, but we tend not to quite get the details of it, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, it's great. And it's a, you know, constant pursuit, of learning. You know, obviously a formal degree is one way. There's many other ways now, and as a manager and someone in a leadership position, that for constant learnings is prominent, and you know there's a lot of different ways to network now, but also internally is always a good source for learning and communicating also. Is it something that you're proactively doing, whether it be externally, internally, and is it something you've always done?
Yeah, it's something I've always done myself personally. I've always done a certification or a degree or a master's of some kind. Just because I realize that if I stand still for too long, then I'll be left in the dust. Because there's a huge raft of people kind of right behind you who are looking to be everything they can be, I suppose, not to be too cliched. And, you know, to some degree, there's no point pushing them to strive to be better if we're not doing the same ourselves. So for me, it's I not only need to be pushing my education further and my leadership skills and learning more about various aspects of security and the business and everything else, but it's setting a good example for those who come after me. So my number two and my number three, those people who will run things if I move on or if anything were to happen, that I need them to be in a position to do the same. And if I do that, I found that they tend to follow. So we've quite a robust program here at the moment of developing our staff, whether that be PCI accreditations or ISACA CISM certificates or cloud security certificates. There's nearly always someone doing something, and I like to encourage that because it works in everyone's favor. You know, they bring more skills to the table. We help them develop those skills, and ideally we build a relationship which will last, because currently 18 months to 2 years is the average employment for a security professional, I think. And you know, if I can get another 6 months out of that by building a relationship where everyone benefits, well then that's a big win to the business.
What is going on then in the security space to have this kind of relatively short lifespan? A lot of people looking at it from a consulting contractual standpoint. I know the demand's clearly there. What is actually happening there in the market really for security people?
Well, I suppose the market is crying out for more people with more skills at the moment. I think it's an obvious thing to say. I'm not sure what the number is now, but about 6 months ago, I think it was 1.5 million open security jobs around the world, primarily in the West. That's a huge number of jobs. And people just don't exist to fill them. And while some people have some of the skills, they don't have all of them. And there are a number of people moving over from the other disciplines who aren't quite ready yet, but we should, you know, we should take them on board if we can and develop possible. But generally, just to a certain degree, it's come to importance quite late in its life, because I know it's quite young in terms of the outside looking in, but like we've been doing this for 20 years. So it's blossomed now maybe into something which requires more people than had been anticipated. But you can see that changing now in the education system. You have undergrad degrees pushing towards it, you know, and specifically on the topics of security, which were never there before. So there is a recognition that there's many more opportunities there. But between now and when those guys and girls get to a point where they're robust enough to really take the helm, we need to subsidize that in the middle. And I suppose that's where consultancy and contracting comes in.
Right. Do you, I mean, I'm assuming you believe that the kind of in-house is best, because the threat's kind of always there. You know, it's difficult to go in on a smaller project and set things up, but you need people to, you know, be constantly on top of things and operating for the business. It makes sense to me, but is that always necessarily the case?
I think it depends on the business. It's like anything else, right? Like security is always a factor, but how you fill that gap is up to you. For some places, then having a full-time security team might be worthwhile. But at the same time, if you consider a 24/7 security operations center will require 18 people to fully staff year round, which is quite heavy. So if you're a small company, that's definitely without outside of your budget. So, you know, there is a very good case for outsourcing those kind of functions, the heavier ones where they do the analytics, where they review what's coming in, where they apply intelligence to the feedback you're getting from your IDS, IPS, from your various different security tools. On the other hand, someone to drive security strategy, yeah, I believe that should be an internal role. I believe it should be supported in whichever way is most effective for the business. So that might be you have an internal security manager or an internal CISO who owns that strategy, because only somebody who's within the business can truly understand the business strategy and align the security strategy with it. But there's no reason that person can't be supported by a combination of FTEs if available, plus contractors, plus consultants for a few days a month or whatever suits the business model best. Because of the severe lack in skills at the moment, that if you try to fill your team, you will find yourself with skills gaps. So you're always going to need to supplement them somewhere.
Right. You know, a bit back on the kind of the mentorship and the leadership stuff. You know, I'm assuming you had influences along the way. So, you know, I'd be interested to kind of learn about those. You know, and then when it comes to leadership, you know, you talked about the kind of the shorter lifespan that security people typically have. You know, is that something that you're constantly kind of working towards and are conscious of, and you know, constantly learning about what to implement to help improve that kind of churn?
Okay, well, I'll start with the mentors and influences moving way down. Like anyone, I have a lot of influences. I think lecturers in college are probably underrepresented when it comes to influencing early on. So I know for me, a lot of my lecturers in Griffith College where I did my undergrad pointed me towards security to some degree or another. You get a lot of opportunities as you're coming up through the ranks where there's a window of availability somewhere where you can reach out and take an opportunity. And if you're in the right place and right time, and have a good boss who take the risk, That for me happened a few times between my career, and it really made a big difference. From my first job, I started working in a college, just doing the Linux network engineering stuff. And my boss at the time, John Mollahan, is his number two, a guy called Gavin McCullough, they took a risk on me, and they kind of trained me in this idea of attention to detail and finishing things rather than just giving up when you hit the 60 or 70% when it gets hard, you know, not doing the full 100 by any means at the college, right? We didn't quite have the budget for that, but you know, pushing through that awkward place to get some good stuff done. I had a lot of good guys then as well. I worked with the security area, and in security as well, because there is quite a shortage of people. You need to be a bit smarter about how you choose your mentors, your influences. for me, I got some good feedback from the boss in a security firm, a guy called Brendan Fay, who really could deconstruct something in his head in about 30 seconds, and the rest of us took an hour. It was quite a scary feat to look upon. But at the same time, working within a team there, I found mentors and influencers in that team who were arguably the same level as I was, but were a lot better at meeting one or more things, you know. So looking around there, I had a guy, Tony Clark and Patrick Fitzgerald, who were both instrumental to my security career, and realistically they were the same level as me, but you know, I would consider them mentors and influencers nonetheless, you know. And that's probably an important lesson if you're moving into security, is that you're not going to find people who are always directly above you or in the chain of command who will be your mentors, and maybe they're not always the best people to do it, and because there is a shortage, I think look horizontally for those around you who can really add value to how you view the world and how you see things. And you might be a year or two older than you, or even a bit younger, but there is a broader range of experience available. And I suppose if you are looking for an influencer or someone, then look for someone who understands the business as well. So my boss and I worked in a company called the Rank Group, a lady called Julia Harris. She taught me the virtues of living in the gray. Because obviously in security, we push to the black or the white. Consistently, we have a tendency to go towards one extreme or the other, and realistically, it's the wrong approach. You need to be able to live in the center somewhere. So kind of wrapping all that up, you know, I would say look for mentors and leaders anywhere around you, not just above you. They could be sitting beside you or in a different team. They all have valuable experience to add.
I like that. I think it's such a good point. I think that, you know, sometimes you learn the most profound things from, you know, junior people. I think I'm one who always speaks about, you know, new people to the team actually bring such an interesting perspective on things and have that kind of fresh take. So they're such a good source for information. And I think that they're massively underutilized for some great feedback, if they're just starting a company, for example. So, yeah, really good point there. I like it.
Yeah, and if you consider that, you know, essentially, and this is the millennial question to a certain degree, right? But these guys and girls who are coming in who are a bit younger, they have their finger in the pulse, and they know how they want to work. They know where they want to work. And inevitably, we always end up following suit. So, for example, more and more companies using Slack now. Group messaging is how things are done in the real world when you're out with your friends and you're doing something outside of work, and it's making its way into the workplace. So to a certain degree, understanding the lifestyles of those we work with, especially in the younger echelons, will kind of give us an insight into where we're going to end up in a few years' time as a business.
It's interesting, and obviously to that point in the security space, I'm assuming that's part of that's a tricky part of the job, is that technology is changing and behaviors do change. So how do you kind of stay ahead of the security threats? Is that something that you have to be constantly conscious of, and I suppose how do you approach that?
It is a difficult challenge, and personally I think it's not a challenge security can solve on their own. So for the organization and now Interroot, we've quite a broad, it's a fairly big organization spread across Europe, right? So we've a number of centers around Europe, and it on one hand, it means you have a fragmented security team, fragmented security apparatus, but at the same time, it gives you a little bit more in terms of kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say matrix management, but in terms of security feedback. So we have teams who look after firewalls, we have teams who look after intrusion prevention systems, we have teams who look after DDoS, all these different things, and they all have their own expertise, they all have their own skills. They are best placed to keep an eye on the vulnerabilities and the threats facing us from those different technological sides, and kind of bringing those together into a virtual team, as it were, for regular updates and regular communications and collaboration, more so is really the only way to keep on top of it. And then to inform that with the business view of what threats are relevant, because obviously each business has its own threat profile. That's to say, it has its own view on where the risks are for it, and they should inform how we view the vulnerability of ourselves and our businesses, and that should be filtered down to those guys on the ground who deal with the stuff day to day, and their feedback should filter back up to us to make sure we're making the right decisions and right choices at the right time. But It's very much a collaborative effort.
And is that a collaboration externally as well, I would assume, you know, with you know,
partners, suppliers, vendors, kind of UK CERT, for example, would be one we put a lot of data from, because there's a lot of cyber emergency response teams around the world, whether it be UK or US or anywhere else. Everyone has their own this is threat feed, realistically, and we all subscribe to those, and we pull information from them and try and make the best judgments we can in the moment. But yeah, there's to a certain degree, it's kind of like drinking from a fire hose, right? It can be too much information in some cases, but trying to cut through that, realistically, the only way you'll do that is by spreading it out and bringing in people into your confidence and giving them the power to make decisions on the security of things on their own, while providing them with the best practices that they need to make sure those decisions are as close to right as possible.
Interesting, yeah. So it really is interesting. It's the whole, a lot of security really is just about, you know, it really information seeking, you know, a lot of collaboration, you know, from a high level perspective to just, you know, identify potential threats and stay on top of things. It's, you know, you really have to be, I suppose, very proactive in your role when you think about it from a high level.
Yeah, yeah, and it's important to understand that it's a complex thing. You know, security has complexity built right through it. But I suppose as a CISO, my goal is to simplify that as much as possible. And it's not always possible, but the aim should be simplification of process, simplification of response, simplification of everything we do to turn it into something which we as humans can deal with. So there are some areas where you might use data analytics or AI to simplify some of it. Correlation engines to map, you know, events to known bad things, as it were. I'm deliberately avoiding all the tech jargon if I can help it, but you know, we have a lot of technology and tooling to help us with that, and the goal of it should be to simplify things down such that the security team on the ground have to deal with as little as possible. And they only really need to deal with what matters most. So essentially, we should be working on an exception basis rather than a deal with everything which comes in.
Brilliant. Well, I know we're almost at half an hour now, so I'll try not to keep you for too much longer. But you know, just from a really broad perspective, the security space, the security industry in general, you know, what direction do you think it's going? What do you think? Do you think there's going to be any kind of real shifts in the space over the next few years?
Well, I think probably the biggest, so a lot of things that are happening now will continue for a while. A big focus on AI and analytics, a big focus on cloud security. These are things we're already doing. I suspect that this has kind of started in the last year as well, at least I've been kind of more aware of it, is a changing of what we define our perimeters to be. So currently, well, traditionally, the perimeter has been that big circle around your entire organization and everything lives inside it, and you secure the perimeter. And that was the goal, you know. Everything outside was bad, everything inside was good. And there were degrees of good, to be fair. Like, you know, some things be more good than others, and you separate things out based on risk. But I think we're starting to move much towards a kind of a shrinking the perimeter perspective, where with the rise of automation, we can now shrink the perimeter into having lots of smaller perimeters. So you might have each branch office might be its own little island, which could be managed centrally. Each laptop, to a certain degree, could have its own security profile attached to it. It could be independent of everything else. You'll be allowed to do things or not do things based on something which fits your profile as an individual and your profile as a laptop user. So I kind of think that's shrinking the perimeter. Which would allow much more fine-grained control over how we do things, so we can tailor it a bit better towards individual needs. I think that's probably one of the big things I'm looking forward to anyway. I know we're working on that kind of stuff here ourselves, and it kind of allowed then for us to do a lot of other improvements which are non-security orientated, because I kind of think if we're not working towards general kind of general improvements in the business and technology and the process we use, well then, we're just doing security for security's sake. It needs to be driving us towards a better way of working as companies and as individuals.
I like it. I like it. Well, Killian, thank you so much for taking the time. I enjoyed the chat. It was I certainly learned quite a lot, and it was good to get your perspective on things. So thank you.
No problem. It was
very much enjoyable from my end.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.